Kids These Days.
This is Kids These Days.
You're listening to Kids These Days, where we're talking about raising Alaska's future today on this listener-supported radio station. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Kids These Days focuses on issues that concern youth, families, and the community as a whole in South Central Alaska. This week, we're talking about the empty nest. It's a significant time of transition for many families when newly minted legal adults move out or away from home to begin their own lives independent of their first families. That's the topic of our in-studio discussion and your calls today on the program. Also in this hour, we'll hear about the changing demographics at UAA and about a growing trend of 20-somethings who are failing to launch. That's as well as heartfelt commentary from a mom whose only child has flown the coop. This is Kids These Days, and I'm your host, Shanna Sheehy. It's September, and by now, most older teens who aren't in high school anymore have moved on to the next thing. Do you have a child who just left home for the first time? If so, we want to hear from you. Call our Kids These Days number. That's 1-888-583-7234 or 888-KTD-RADIO. And let us know what's on your mind. You can also email your questions or comments to us at mail@kidsthesedays.org. That said, I'd like to welcome two guests to the program today. On the phone this hour is Pam Cantone. Pam is a certified PCI parent life coach who specializes in helping families through the empty nest transition. She's also a mom who recently sent her own child off into the big world. Thanks for being with us today, Pam.
Thank you for having me.
And in the studio with me is Larry Holman. Larry is a licensed marriage and family therapist who owns his own Anchorage practice. He's also the father of two adult children, ages 32 and 30, who are now married. Larry says he's experienced firsthand the transition of kids leaving home, coming back, and then leaving again. Welcome to the program, and thanks for being with us in the studio today, Larry.
Thank you.
I think a good place to start maybe is to ask you, Pam, to tell us a little bit about your certification as a parent life coach. Tell us a little bit about what parent coaching, life coaching is and how it relates to the empty nest.
Parent life coaching is a process that focuses in on a client's individual values. And the coaching process is a co-creative, supportive professional relationship with the sole purpose of unleashing the potential that already exists within the client's family and the dynamics of the family, and really inspiring them to identify goals and changes to nurture the desired life that they really truly want.
And so your specialty, though, with parent life coaching is with the empty nest. So how, if you were going to talk about how you put it into practice, what does it mean? Are you sitting in a room with some parents and some kids and trying to figure out the best way to help people through that?
I have different approaches, really depending on the needs of the client and the situation. Just previously, last week, I was working with a client who is actually a college student. And having a hard time adjusting to the college life, being that they only had a week into the process, they felt they weren't connecting to other kids. They were having trouble dealing with the anxiety of not having their comfort zone of home and the family relationships. And over the phone, I actually worked with this student to reframe their thinking and to identify what it truly was that they were looking for and actually coming up with a plan to make it happen. I also work with the parent. I also work with the universities and the colleges to help these kids kind of make the adjustment so they're not dropping out and they're not giving up because it is such a hard, difficult change. And they need some time, and sometimes they need some guidance, and so does the family, to kind of rework all of the different dynamics of the relationships, because the empty nest is kind of vacant of what was and trying to find the new beginning to it.
Well, Larry, let's hear a little bit about your background and where you might deal with, in your practice, families and people who are going through this particular transition in their family life, the empty nest.
Yeah, I tend to work more with the parents, although I do work with some older teens, too. So I'm probably more familiar on a professional level with the issues that that parents go through. In terms of my own personal life, of course, I've experienced two kids that have left home and have now established their own life. So I went through that on a personal level, my wife and I did.
And you said something to me before we got started with the program that they launched, they came back, and then maybe they launched and came back more than once. Is that
yeah,
the case?
Yeah, well, my son went through a fairly traditional leaving of home. He went off to college and was back in the summertime. And then he did come back after he graduated and spent probably 9 months with us before he actually then got married to his college sweetheart. So he was with us after college. And that was kind of an interesting time because he was really an adult. But my daughter had a less traditional. She was maybe less secure in terms of what she wanted to do, less directed, I suppose you might say. And so she went off for a while and did some college and came back and then was kind of floating around a little bit, worked for a while, came back. And so she was in and out maybe three times probably, I would say, before she finally left home for good. And so that was a different experience. And of course, probably what I would say about the two experiences is that, you know, kids have individual differences and no one size fits all. So you have to kind of decide what you're going to do as a parent based on your kid's temperament and abilities and maturity and things like that. And so sometimes parents kind of get rigid and say, well, you know, this is the rule. We got to make it this way. And that's really not how it works best, I don't think, for kids. That's probably more a function of parents being comfortable with their own set of rules and structure in their life. So.
Well, Kids These Days is all about community, so it seemed fitting to invite someone already familiar to the radio community to be with us today. Barbara Brown has been an active community member for years and has been featured on many public radio programs. After 18 years, the nest is emptying for commentator Barbara Brown and her husband, Tim. Their daughter, Sophie, recently left for college. Barbara has always said life is a river, not a lake, but she says it's harder when your only child is off and running and you're the one left behind. Here's the first in a series of pieces Barbara Brown is doing on this topic for Kids These Days.
By the time you hear this, my nest will be empty. The chick will have flown the coop for college. I've cried, mostly just a tearing up actually, a tiny bit every day for the last month. I like to think I'm an anticipation worrier, that when the thing actually happens, I'm just fine. It means I worry about a lot of things that never happen, but when they do, I'm in the game. When Sophie was three, she asked what homesick meant. Did houses get sick too? I explained homesick was when you weren't home, when you missed your own bed, your mommy, your daddy. She announced that homesick was a sickness she would never have, at three. So I knew what I was looking forward to. I was never a one-role mama. Being Sophie's mother was never the only thing I did. I worked, I was an active volunteer, I have a wonderful book club, I still run half marathons, I wrote, acted in theater, started a radio show. None of those, except being married, necessarily included Sophie. Some specifically excluded her. But now, as I face her imminent departure, I realize that some higher meaning, some transcendent calling, attached itself to me as a mother. It was where I placed a lot of my values, my definition. And no, that doesn't mean I was necessarily attentive, caring, tender. I think I'm actually a less than exemplary mother. I tend to the overcritical, nagging, in-your-face brand of mothering. Despite all my best intentions, I'm often a screamer, a loser of cool, a complainer. Sophie and I argue a lot. We're not often confidants. And mostly, when I ask if she'd like to do something with me, her answer is, nah. The classic stages of emotional separation have often been brutal in our house. mellower Tim witnessed mother-daughter screaming matches as if he were watching alien beings. So why am I so desperately unprepared for her departure? Part of it is simply about being left behind. I was the daughter who moved across country, the woman who moved to Alaska. When leaving is to be done, I'm the one doing the leaving. The new future is bold and attractive. Being left is boring, stagnant, ho-hum at best. And now I'm being left. When I left for college, I went home the summer after my freshman year, and then I never went home again. I had internships, research, opportunities that called me elsewhere. And because I'm an anticipation warrior, I'm not saying goodbye as Sophie leaves for college. I'm saying goodbye as she leaves for life. I don't think she'll be coming home again. She's been gone for a whole summer before. A summer Tim and I loved because acres of time opened up, hours and hours of time. But this is different. As we were packing Sophie's bedding to mail down earlier, I said, "Oh, a pillow. Let me get a spare from the upstairs closet." She went to her bed, grabbed her pillow, and threw it in. "No," I said, "that's your own pillow. You take a spare to college." "No," she said, "I want my real pillow." Her real pillow, her real home would be where she was. This home would be the place of the substitutes, the spares for guests from the linen closet. Would I have it any other way? Not in a heartbeat. I had high school friends who wouldn't venture far from their mother's wings, and I always felt sad for their lives. I am blessed with a beautiful daughter who will never feel that homesick sickness. When Sophie was little and the separation anxiety was hers, I made up a story for her about a mama bird who always came back to her chicks. We'd repeat together, "What do mommies do? They always come back." Daughters don't always come back. Daughters should look at the new future of their new lives and bound off happily, confidently, and with adventure in their hearts. That nutty woman crying at the airport when she sends that daughter off? That's me. I'll get over it. I'll keep you posted.
That was Barbara Brown. And obviously, that was a heartfelt portrayal of what she was feeling leading up to her daughter's departure. Pam Cantone, since I heard that your daughter recently left home, maybe you could respond to some of those feelings and some of the happiness and sadness that we heard Barbara Brown sort of work through in that piece.
I have to admit, personally, my heartstrings were being tugged at. Just knowing how the process went for my daughter, and she was homesick. It's hard because what we all want as parents are nothing but the best intentions for our children. But like Larry was saying, there's no one-size-fits-all in any of the parenting dilemmas and answers that fit those dilemmas. So I find as a parent coach, and even within my own process as a parent, I try to step into the coaching process of really digging deep to find out what the child needs and how to get there. And to be able to put my feelings kind of on the shelf a little bit and be able to kind of mourn the loss of my child and almost welcome the adult child into my life and try to see that what I was losing was my child and my parenting of a child, but now I'm grasping on to parenting an adult. And I don't think parenting ever ends. It doesn't stop when they turn 5, but it also doesn't stop when they turn 18 and they head out the door, because I know just for a fact that even my mother still worries about me, and I won't tell you how old I am, but the worry is still there and the parenting is still there. It's just that I think as a coach, I try to point out that the parenting is redefined by the stage that our kids are in. Mm-hmm. And I think there's just so much emotion as a mom looking at what we lose. It helps to have somebody kind of point out what we're gaining.
Do you have a similar perspective on that as a therapist?
As a therapist?
Or as a parent?
I was going to start with as a parent.
Well, please do. Start as a parent.
That's more personal. I actually had mixed feelings. I had, of course, some of the intense feelings that Barbara had and that Pam talked about, but the feelings were mixed and they were tempered with a sense of pride, I suppose, or a sense of accomplishment too, you know, that we had relatively successfully launched our children, you know, into adulthood. And it was really a time of transition, but it was intense in good ways and also in difficult ways. I remember particularly when my son went away to college, because my daughter was still in town, I just had this aching, you know, that you can tell that Barbara has. And yet, when I talked to him and, you know, he reported on how he was doing, it was just a sense of, wow, this is really a cool thing too, you know, so really a mixed feeling. As a professional, as a therapist, I can sit with people and help them through this period of time. And it's complicated for parents because I think in our society, there's probably more focus on children. Maybe there's more sense of over-involvement sometimes with parents. And now not only are they faced with their children leaving, they're also faced with a relationship that maybe has not been worked on, maintained, you know, their own relationship with their husband or wife. And so that can add lots of complexity to already difficult transition. So you have an empty nest syndrome, but you're also saying, okay, now I'm with this man who I haven't paid attention to or I haven't focused on for, you know, 18 years maybe, or there's been a different kind of focus. And so it's often a mistake, I think, for people once they have children to not really maintain a relationship, their primary relationship. And in fact, there's kind of an axiom in my world as a marriage and family therapist that you have to think of your intimate relationship with your husband or wife as the most important relationship. It's not that your relationships with your children are unimportant or secondary at all. It's just that you have to pay attention to that and maintain that primary relationship. And it's easy to not do that, you know, because that usually is one that can have lots of conflict in it. So,
well, I think this is a great place to remind listeners that you're listening to Kids These Days, and this is a listener participation program. You can call at 1-888-583-7234. That's 1-888-KTD-RADIO. And you can leave a question for us or a comment for our guest to answer on this program. And you can also email your comments to mail@kidsthesedays.org. And there's a call that came from Sitka.
Hi, this is Jeff from Sitka with an empty nest question. Our family worked really hard during my daughter's senior year to support her getting into the college of her choice by helping her research schools that fit her interests and helping her fill out multiple college and student loan applications and making sure she met all the numerous deadlines each school had. And the whole process was pretty time-consuming and stressful. But all the work finally paid off because as of a few weeks ago, she's successfully installed in a dorm at her top pick university. And she's made new friends, really enjoyed her classes. And back home, we're all exhausted. And, of course, we love and miss her and are thrilled that she's had a successful launch. And I feel a little guilty asking this. Is it natural to feel a sense of relief when your child finally leaves the nest?
Hallelujah. That's all I can say.
That's Larry Holman.
It's a lot of work being a parent, especially if you're involved, and it's a very intense experience.
Pam, it sounds like you guys are both chuckling. What is it that's making you laugh about that, Pam Cantone?
I've actually kind of done a little research, and I find that as much as we, and everybody's different, but there's like three stages you go through. It's that moment of relief comes after the grief of loss, and then the relief, and then all of a sudden you step right into joy, and you're dancing around just realizing what you have in front of us and all the opportunities that are available to you. So to ask if it's natural, absolutely.
It was intriguing to me, too, in Barbara Brown's piece. She mentioned, she said she had acres of time open up to her. Is that one of the things that makes parents joyous when they're at least one, or, you know, then all of their children are not so much a part of their daily life, not so much a part of the daily thought process?
Yeah, I think that's part of it. And, you know, it depends on what kind of a parent you are. But, you know, your kids need less of your time as they get older, of course, in their teens and whatnot. But really, for me, it was more about not worrying about them. You know, it wasn't so much that there was a lot of time that I had on my hands, but, you know, if my daughter wasn't home at her curfew, you know, that's a very, very stressful thing. And so if you have kids who might struggle and you worry about them, or if you're a worrier yourself, you know, or even if you're not really a worrier, you're going to worry about them. So that went away to some extent, which was a pretty nice thing.
I would love to add that as a mom and the moms that I work with as a parent coach, that time is where I work with my moms to rediscover themselves. And it's such an incredible opportunity to really start living their life according to themselves rather than according to their children. And it does get better.
Well, we'll get back to some more questions from our callers and also some more from both Larry Holman and Pam Cantone. But first this. While some parents may be facing a house that seems just a little too empty after the kids have gone to college, a growing number of Anchorage area students are choosing to stay at or close to home, attending the University of Alaska Anchorage. UAA has been reaching out to those students over the past 10 years, and as Jessica Cochran tells us, that message, combined with the economy, is working to draw more local students to the campus.
When Professor Ronald Spatz first came to UAA in the 1980s, it was still two separate schools, the university and a community college. It was a commuter campus with lots of older adult part-time students, and a community college feel, where students came for their classes, then left. That began changing in 1998, when three new dorms opened up, bringing campus housing to serve 950 full-time degree-seeking students. Once there were facilities for them, more traditional-aged college students began coming.
There is a larger, growing body of traditional-age students taking advantage of all kinds of opportunities at this institution. You know, we could easily fill 1,000 more beds if we had them for students to live on campus.
Spatz says UAA has always attracted good students, but the overall quality may be improving, in part due to a program he started in 1998. The University Honors College offers qualified students a rigorous intellectual atmosphere, interdisciplinary coursework, and the chance to do research as undergraduates. The program has grown over the years, both in the number of students enrolled and in the range of research opportunities available to its students and anyone else on campus. For some students, it may add up to a better overall experience than at what Spatz calls a fancy outside college.
The advantage of going to UAA is that in some of our areas, like the Honors College academic programs and undergraduate research, we do, when we know about the students, when we can get to them, really try to follow up and try to convince them of things that might benefit them. At another place, there are so many other people that are already wanting those things that somebody who doesn't put themselves forward will be left behind.
The global economic picture also may be motivating kids to take a look at their less expensive state school options. Jacob Wingert is a Service High graduate and UAA freshman majoring in computer science. For now, he lives with his mom, but he hopes to rent an apartment with a friend when he can afford it. The decision to go to UAA was partly financial.
And partly because I didn't think a degree from a specific university would make that big of a difference. So, I mean, just the degree title was what I was after to get a job in the future.
His buddy and ping pong rival Paul Heron is in a similar situation.
Mechanical engineering is a degree I'm looking to start out with, and I might head out of state to branch to a specialization like aerospace engineering or robotics program.
But for now, he's happy here. Aaron spends free time between classes here at the ping pong tables in the student center or in the redesigned Wolf Den nearby.
They have free bagels, coffee at 2 o'clock. They switch to chips and salsa. Then at 6:30, I think, is the free dinner stuff. So they're really trying to give a lot of free stuff away, just make everyone feel at home that's not staying on campus.
94% of UAA students are commuters, so making them feel integrated is important. That it's working for students like Paul and Jacob is good news for Bruce Schultz, Vice Chancellor for Student Affairs. He's worked hard to make students feel they belong. In fact, the doors of the student union are labeled with a new logo, the word belong, with pictures of ways commuters might arrive on campus, a bicycle, a bus. A year ago, a new commuter student services program was created. Schultz says studies show students succeed academically when they feel connected to their campus and spend more time there.
If you go home and do your work there, you're learning as an independent person. And so then you, the depth of your understanding and the comprehension is different. Your thought process is different. You're not challenged the same way as what you are as if you were with your peers. And it's just a deeper sense of learning, as well as there's a lot of energy that comes from being on campus. And you're exposed to a lot of different ideas and different opportunities.
This year, a new program called MapWorks is being piloted. It has first-year students fill out surveys to see how they're adjusting to life in college. That way, advisors and other staff can proactively look for students who may need a little extra help. Next, Schultz plans to focus on student retention. For full-time degree-seeking students, the retention rate has already increased from around 55% 9 years ago to 72% last year. But Schultz wants to find out just why students are leaving and figure out how to meet their needs and keep them. I'm Jessica Cochran.
You're listening to Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. Today we're in the studio with Larry Holman and Pam Cantone. On Kids These Days, we're all about listener-supported conversations, so be a part of it. Call right now at 1-888-KTD-RADIO, that's 888-583-7234, to ask a question or make a comment. And you can always email us at mail@kidsthesedays.org. Well, coming up on Kids These Days, we'll talk more with our guests all about the empty nest. Also, Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez explores the trend of delayed adulthood with UAA psychology professor Claudia Lampman. That and more of your calls after this break.
Slip sliding away. Slip sliding away. You know the nearer your destination, the more you slip sliding away. I know a man, he came from my hometown. He wore his passion for his woman like a thorny crown. He said, Dolores, I live in fear. My love for you is so overpowering, I'm afraid that I will disappear. Slip sliding away.
Next time on Kids These Days, it's all about moving indoors. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm betting you've noticed the leaves turning colors on the trees and the crisp, chilly morning air that means fall is here and winter is on its way. As the weather changes, we'll be talking about how families can still find much-needed recreational activities all year round in South Central. In studio guests Michelle Laufer and Margaret Timmerman will answer your questions, so call 888-583-7234. That's 888-KTD-RADIO to join the conversation. We'll learn about some well-established local recreation programs, get the scoop from teens themselves about what they're doing for fun inside, and we'll have the first in a series of outdoor recommendations from AK On The Go mom, Erin Kirkland. All that coming up next time on Kids These Days. Join us Tuesdays at 2 and 7 on KSKA. This is Kids These Days on this listener-supported station. I'm Shanna Sheehy. With me to talk about the empty nest today is Pam Cantone, a certified parent life coach, and Larry Holman, a local Anchorage marriage and family therapist. But first, what do you get when you cross adulthood with adolescence? You get adult essence, one term for the recent and increasingly common trend of delayed adulthood among 20-somethings. While some children are leaving behind an empty nest, other children are remaining at home well into their 20s, starting their own careers and families much later in life than a couple of decades ago. Kids These Days producer Sarah Gonzalez spoke with UAA psychology professor Dr. Claudia Lampman about the causes behind this trend.
Hello, Dr. Lampman. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks for having me.
I want to talk today about this growing trend of delayed adulthood, or young people in their 20s who are taking longer in life to hit all of those typical adult milestones, like graduating from college or getting married, buying a house, starting a family. So obviously these things are not necessarily done in that order these days, if at all. But some studies that we'll talk about later, they've shown that since 1970, there has been a 50% increase in 20-somethings that live with their parents.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of research today that suggests that there's been generational shifts in personality, generational shifts in people's attitudes about life and school and success. And, you know, some of these generational changes seem very positive. For example, today, young people have much higher self-esteem. They're more optimistic about their futures. They're more open-minded. They're more assertive than previous generations. But there's a downside as well, you know, that today people are more narcissistic. They are more entitled in their attitudes. And, you know, they're more likely to see the world as owing them something than previous generations.
So we're talking about like 18 to 20 something olds.
Yeah, you know, there's been people born in the 70s and 80s and even 90s now, people who are, they've been given various labels like Generation X first, then Generation Me, Millennials is the most current term being used for young people today. Yeah, but people born in the, you know, 70s, 80s and 90s.
So you talked about the sense of entitlement. How does that play into starting an adult life later?
Well, you know, kids today have been raised to really believe in themselves. People have a very, very high sense of self-esteem. You know, it sounds really good that people should feel confident and optimistic about who they are. The problem is the self-esteem is not really based in anything. And, you know, starting in the 70s and maybe even a little bit earlier than that, there's been this sort of move, this pursuit of high self-esteem for everyone in society. We moved away from saying, you know, I love you, but I don't love your behavior, and I can still discipline you for bad behavior, to just, I love you unconditionally no matter what you do. And when you do something wrong, I don't change the way I act toward you as a parent or a teacher. I have two children, an 11-year-old and a 17-year-old in the Anchorage School District. You know, I went to my daughter's dance competition, and indeed it was a competition recently where everybody at the end of the four-hour competition got a trophy. And you know what? There are no bronze trophies anymore. There's only silver, gold, and platinum trophies.
So you're saying that maybe learning to lose is an essential part of developing coping skills so that you can be a successful adult.
That's exactly it. And that kids make it to college today often without having their self-esteem challenged or threatened. And, you know, grade inflation is huge, that there's a clear documentation that kids get higher grades for less work than 20, 30, 40 years ago, for sure. They get to college and they're rudely surprised by getting B's and C's. And, you know, when you're training tomorrow's nurses and doctors and engineers, we don't give them A's for mediocre work. We are training people to take care of our health and to build our buildings, and they need to do A work to get A's.
So, Dr. Lampman, how is adulthood defined?
Well, it's changed quite a bit over the years. You know, it used to be that in your early 20s, you were called a young adult. That was the time of young adulthood, 18, 21. That was considered adulthood, not any longer. Your 20s is now considered emerging adulthood. That's the term that's being used to describe that period in time. Whereas, you know, 30 years ago, in your early 20s, you tended to get married and start a family and buy a house. Now those things are postponed until your 30s and sometimes even 40s. And that you spend your 20s more kind of finding yourself and figuring out what you want to do with your life.
So 30's the new 20.
30's the new 20.
So earlier I mentioned some studies on this trend that I've read about, and I'd like to to have you respond to them. There is the Network on Transition to Adulthood project at the University of Pennsylvania, and some of the researchers there found that 75% of 18 to 24-year-olds get money from their parents, and of these, 40% are given at least $10,000 a year. And one more statistic that they found that goes hand in hand with that one is that parents provide on average $38,000 in material assistance, or about $2,200 for every year between the ages of 18 and 34.
Yeah. You know, those numbers are staggering. I don't have any actual statistics, but on top of those numbers, most of those kids are also going into debt themselves. They're also taking on student loan as well. You know, the idea here is that kids are clearly getting the message that this is a period in time when you don't have to take care of yourself, that somebody else is going to continue to take care of you and at a very high cost, a very high rate, that makes you probably less likely to feel, I need to hurry up and get on with my life and figure out a way to start being self-sufficient. That kind of monetary support, I think, kind of contributes to this sense of entitlement that we see really commonly in young people today.
Sure. And it seems to me that if you're saddled with a lot of debt and it's taking longer to work and take classes, that, of course, you're entering into marriage or a serious relationship or having children is absolutely going to come later in life.
It is going to come later in life. And the thing is that the later it comes in life, the less likely young people are to feel the pressure of that. And so if you know, you were raised in my generation and you were thinking, well, in my 20s, I want to get married, I want to start a family, and I want to buy a house, you had a lot of pressure on you to get a job and to get a place of your own and to start putting money away toward a down payment on a house. That's not even a realistic thing for most kids today. And the farther and farther those pressures go, the easier and easier it is to say, I'm just going to live with my parents until I get to that place where I can take care of myself.
What would be your advice, Dr. Lampman, for parents or grandparents or people who are raising children right now to instill those children in their care with a proper sense of self-esteem without crushing their hope, without saying, you know, future's tough kid, or is that the way to go?
My job as a parent is to produce self-sufficient adults. I chose to have two children, and I take that job really seriously. And to me, that means that I'm going to have children who are able to take care of themselves. And that means that when kids are old enough to start helping around the house, they do. They start doing dishes and doing laundry and cooking and contributing from the age of 5 up. You know, that they realize that to be a member of a family means to be a contributor to the family, not just on the receiving end, but on the giving end as well. Encourage your children to get a job when they're younger and to see the value of hard work and to see how hard working really is.
And maybe let them fail sometimes.
They have to fail. They absolutely have to fail. And you can tell your children, you love them when they fail, and talk about what their next step should be. But we need kids who are resilient. It's the best thing you can do for your child is teach them how to, you know, face hardship and hard work and realize that they're not always going to be the best and they are sometimes going to fail. And that's life.
I want to thank you, Dr. Claudia Lampman, for speaking with kids these days about this issue. And I mentioned today during this interview the Network to Transitions in Adulthood from the University of Pennsylvania. And we will provide a link to that on our website, kidsthesedays.org. Thank you so much for being here.
You're very welcome.
That's our producer, Sarah Gonzalez. I'm Shanna Sheehy, and I'm in the studio today with Larry Holman and Pam Cantone. And I imagine each of you must have some responses to everything we just heard in that piece. It's amazing stuff.
I'm glad Dr. Lampman got on her soapbox. That'll keep me from being on my soapbox about the sense of narcissism, entitlement that kids have. I see it every day with parents who come in, and what's created with these children is comes from parents needing to take care of somebody, parents getting their own needs met through taking care of and providing those things. I mean, I was reminded of when my kids were growing up. You know, I lived in a fairly well-off section of town, and the kids, all kids had cars, you know, by the time they were 16 or 17. And my son said, well, Dad, aren't you buying me a car? And I said, no, I'm not buying you a car. Not only am I not buying you a car, you're going to have to pay for your insurance if you drive our car. And so Dr. Lampman is absolutely right. And, you know, all the work in self-esteem and how kids really develop a strong sense of themselves and self-efficacy comes from actually accomplishing something, not being told that they're good or just praising them. It actually comes from doing something, and that's an internalization of I can do this. And the other studies show that people who are successful, there's one commonality among all of them. They work harder than everybody else. People who are most successful work harder than everybody else. And so it's pretty clear. If you're given those things, you don't learn how to work hard. If you're given,
There's no such thing as a bronze medal.
No, there's no, I know, that's wonderful. Well, I grew up in the sports world and coached for years, you know, and it's the same thing. I coached swimming for years, age group swimming, and it's the same thing, you know. Kids who are successful at that work really hard. And they don't just work hard in swimming or the sports. The ones that are go on to be successful work hard in everything they do. So
yeah. Well, Pam Cantone, how are some of the ideas that we heard our producer Sarah Gonzalez and Dr. Lampman talking about in that piece about delayed adulthood? Are these things playing out where you are? You're in Pennsylvania.
Oh yeah, definitely. You know, one thing that the doctor said was, you know, honing in on the idea of failures and, you know, not allowing your kids to be wrong. And what I do in coaching is point out the golden nuggets of learning that is tucked into failures and mistakes. But not only that, but the empowerment of allowing your children to figure out how to fix it, to move forward, to not do it again, and to make things better. And these parents who really aren't allowing their children to feel that empowerment are really doing a huge disservice to them entering into adulthood, because they don't have that feeling that they can do it on their own. And by allowing your children to make mistakes and feel failure and the accomplishment that can come out of it by correcting it and doing better, it's an amazing gift that only a parent can do for their children.
You know, that sense of failing is borne out by what really successful people say. They say that they failed more than any buddy that they know, and it was through those failures that they learned how to become successful. And they continue to fail because they're willing to try things, and they have that sense of sense of self-efficacy, and that's where they learn the most. So successful people fail more than anybody.
Well, I'd like to remind everybody, this is Kids These Days, and this is a call-in question program. So let's go back to our phones. We have a comment from Carl, who called from Wasilla.
Good morning. This is Carl calling from Wasilla on the topic of the empty nest. It's a comment and not a question. One of the comments is, in regards to observation that the idea of our children leaving our homes is kind of a relatively new idea in the history of mankind. I think in our more tribal background, families stayed together and actually had multi-generations, grandparents living in the same household with their children. There weren't economic reasons to leave. And so I think kind of wired into our species is the idea that we did live together. And so this whole empty nest thing, it has some real significance in that it's probably not a normal thing. And so I think it's issues for both the youth who are gaining independence and going out on their own, and of course for us parents who are going through the detachment of losing our loved ones, not losing them, but living without them. It is a transition. That's my comment.
Well, let's start with you, Pam, on this one. So Carl's saying that maybe this whole idea of your nest emptying in the first place is really not particularly well suited with who we are as human beings. Do you think that might be where some of the angst comes from in the parents and the moms in particular who you coach?
Well, this is where my coaching really hones into the client's values and needs, because there's so many cultures out there that don't believe in kicking their kids out into their own world, into their own life. You have multi-generations living under one roof still. And I think it's so key in my work that you define your vision of your happy life based on what you truly value, not what society or what other people are telling you you have to do. And I think sometimes parents function out of fear of judgment, that they're supposed to be doing something. Your kids are supposed to be going to college after high school, and then they're supposed to be moving into their own apartment and supposed to be getting married and starting their own family. It doesn't have to happen that way. And I think as soon as we can loosen up the expectations and really focus in on what it truly is that we want to have our life to be and how we define our happy life, it really, truly looks different from house to house.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really true. You know, I was reminded that when I visited Fiji 2 years ago and stayed with a first family, and there were four generations. There probably were close to 20 people that lived in this one house, kind of extended house. And but what I noticed is that everybody in the family had a job, and so that no one was freeloading. Everybody did something. In fact, I was taken around by two young girls, 9 and 11, and they showed me the whole village. And my wife was toured by one of their 18-year-old sons. So there were grandparents, children, children's children, and great-grandchildren in the same family. But everybody had a job. That's how their society worked.
That kind of goes back to something that Dr. Lampman said, too, in Sarah Gonzalez's piece, is that, you know, she believes and said forcefully that every kid, once they're 5, should have some sort of way of contributing to the whole family unit as a way of sort of trying to make sure that everybody understands that it might be a nest, but that it's a nest where everybody has a job to do.
Right. Well, these two young girls that took me around were delightful. They spoke very good English, whereas the parents didn't speak as good English. And I'm sure they felt a sense of accomplishment showing an American around their village, you know. So it was really nice.
Well, it is interesting as well to wonder, sort of the caller, Carl, did bring up this idea that you know, legally speaking, you were an adult when you were 18 years old. Therefore, you know, I've certainly known parents of friends of mine when I was a teenager myself where 18 meant that you were on your own. It's interesting, and I wonder, there are cultures like what you mentioned, Larry Holman, about Fiji, where that's definitely not the case. But I wonder how, you know, I wonder how that idea that we have in our culture sort of shapes this whole period of time. Are we in this country on this program talking about the empty nest? Because it is something that really shapes what we do, and it doesn't necessarily happen
other places that don't have this kind of this particular type of rite of passage.
Right. Well, it certainly doesn't happen in other cultures, and it probably doesn't even happen in our own culture. And you know, we talk about a main culture, you know, but there are many different subcultures of the United States. Of course, we're quite a melting pot of all sorts of cultures, with very few indigenous people that live here, basically. So, yeah, I'm sure that's true.
Do you have any comments about that, Pam? I know you live what we call, you know, back east, and a lot of people in Alaska are transplanted here. And I would imagine in Allentown, where you are, there might be more opportunity for intergenerational living and support systems.
Absolutely. And to tell you the truth, I think with the economy as it is, I've heard more and more that the emptiness isn't happening as readily as you would think, or it wanted from both sides, some of the parent and some of the child, because, you know, some of these kids are actually not going to college and going right for a job that helps support the family that's already in a struggle because of the economy or you know, the breadwinner has lost their job or whatnot. And again, the dynamics of the family are really kind of molded according to the needs and the values of the individual family. So I really truly feel that the trend is, you know, we got to focus on what it is we really, really want out of our life and not really defining it based on what society is saying that we should be doing.
Well, this is Kids These Days, and you can be a part of this conversation by calling our number. It's 888-583-7234. That's KTD Radio. Or you can always email as well, write to mail@kidsthesedays.org, and you can be a part of this conversation about the empty nest. Let's go back to our phones. Let's hear from Lee, who also called from Wasilla.
Hi, my name is Lee, and I'm calling from Wasilla. In our case, we have two children 16 months apart in age, and one is currently in another country doing a gap year of travel and service before she begins her college a year from now. And the other daughter is a senior focused with some anxiety about making her plans for post-high school. So the last couple of years, since my eldest was a junior in high school, have been really intense in our household, and I haven't felt like I've been terribly responsive to either one of them as they negotiate their particular needs at any given time. So I feel like I'm always one step behind in learning things, just a moment too late to put it to use. I'd love for your guests to talk a little about the specific situation of having two offspring close in age, so that when one is leaving, the other one's getting ready to leave, and you have all the emotions associated with adjusting to the absence of one and anticipating the leaving of the other one. All these emotions are overlapping each other. And in our situation, we're a two-parent family. So with two parents and one youth all having their emotions toward each other and their sister or child kind of tripping over each other, it can be pretty intense, and I would love any thoughts or suggestions. So thank you, and I look forward to hearing your response.
Let's go first to you, Pam Cantone.
This one's personal, because my girls are 21 months apart and extremely close, and I was shocked to realize that the bickering that was happening before my oldest daughter's launch into college was more of the anxiety of them separating than it was about them not getting along. And it really came to a head that, to me, I was missing it as a parent, that I was focusing on my oldest daughter heading off to school and all the things that she was going to miss and not have, not realizing that my younger daughter was in the same process because she was such a huge part of her life day to day. She was the older sister who had her back at high school, you know, day in and day out, and she knew she was there. And it it really didn't click for me, and I felt as if I had dropped the ball, and kind of wasn't there for, you know, supporting my youngest daughter. And I got real down on it, thinking that I missed it. So I actually started kind of coaching both of them, and then tried to work them together into realizing that it's not this cutting the string. It's really this faded relationship, and the redefining of it, that they're not really truly losing each other. They're just redefining it. And they're finding new creative ways to be close. Technology is incredible, and the options that they can do to communicate. We used to just pick up the phone and call once a week, you know, when we were off, but now it's texting or Skyping or, you know, the cell phone is, you're right there at a moment's notice. So I find that it's really interesting to see the adjustments are not just for one person, it's for the whole entire family.
Well, I think we have time for one more contribution. This is an email that came in from Sarah from Wasilla as well. She says, my husband and I are the parents of an only child. She's now a sophomore at an out-of-state university. And then she describes that she's gone through some various feelings throughout this last year of feeling excited for her daughter, of feeling like this cord that connected them got cut. And now she says, at times last year, I felt sad. To me, it was like I was in a period of mourning. And this year, I think it will be much easier. It really helps to have friends and family to talk to that have been there before or who are going through the same thing. And that's quoting from Sarah, who wrote from Wasilla. I wanted to ask you guys this last question to follow up on what Sarah is saying, a question about this idea of there being a kind of grieving process about maybe not the child even leaving home, but the transition that this family is going through. Your family is going through a transition when the dynamic of what has been is changing. Is the word grief one that works to describe what's going on in families during this time, would you say?
A lot of families do experience both the grief and the joy, but some families only experience grief. Sometimes when children move away and they don't do well, you know, when they have addiction issues or maybe they get depressed, you know, it can be excruciating and torturous for a parent to worry about their child who isn't being successful and maybe even in danger. And those are the families that can really suffer, that probably need our help most of all.
Well, I'd like to thank both of you for being here with us today on Kids These Days. And on a note of what Larry Holman just said, we will be linking to some resources within our community in Anchorage for people who may be in a situation like that and need some extra help through this transition. Larry Holman is an Anchorage licensed marriage and family therapist. Thanks so much for being with us, Larry.
You're welcome. Nice to be here.
And Pam Cantone joined us by phone from Pennsylvania. She's a certified parent life coach, and it was really, really wonderful to have you with us today, Pam. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Kids These Days is produced by Sarah Gonzalez. She's also the master of everything you see and experience online at kidsthesedays.org. Jessica Cochran reported from Anchorage for today's program. Barbara Brown shared a personal account of her empty nest with us today. You can listen to it again or get more recent updates from her empty nest by going to kidsthesedays.org. You can also hear all or parts of this program again there too and share them with others. I'm Shanna Sheehy. Thanks so much for joining us on Kids These Days today. We'll be back next time.
The ideas, opinions, and commentary you hear on Kids These Days are those of the host, guests, and contributors, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of its funders or broadcast partners. The Content Producers Guild is solely responsible for what you hear on this program. Kids These Days is made possible by a generous grant from the Association of Alaska School Boards and its Initiative for Community Engagement. Kids These Days is produced in partnership with KSKA, KRUA, and the UAA Department of Journalism and Public Communications.